Welcome to Pets Tell the Truth. This program is dedicated to understanding our animal companions on a deeper level. I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. I'll be your host as we listen to what our animal friends are saying, and as we appreciate the way they view the world, their missions, and their spiritual insights. The first part of the show, we will discuss vibrational healing with our guest, Nancy Broadbent. The second part is reserved for listeners to call in with their questions. The worldwide toll-free number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Tonight's show is brought to you by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. They are the publisher of my book, Pets Tell the Truth. And I would like to announce the publication and release of my new cards. They're inspiration cards called Animals Tell the Truth Wisdom Cards. There are 52 inspiration cards in the deck, and I will tell you how they are to be used. These cards consist of actual telepathic communications that I've had with each animal or plant represented and give certain wisdom messages. The underlying assumption is that the universe doesn't make any mistakes and that nothing occurs by chance. Each card is intended for you that day by the universe, for no two persons will pick the same cards. Each day, pick two cards at random, one for morning and one for evening. Take a few minutes to consider the wisdom on the card in the same way that you would read your daily horoscope. The messages are meant to inspire and uplift you so that you can understand the spiritual challenges you will meet that day. And on the back of each card is a question. What can you teach me today? So I will pick one at random and tell you what it says. Okay, this is a beautiful calendar quality photograph of a buffalo. And the message is about humility. This is directly from the buffalo. I am a messenger. Touch me, and you will understand my gentleness, because it is that of the Great Spirit. I come to teach you humility. You are in the presence of the Great One. Experience this presence today and always. You are cherished beyond your wildest dreams. Let me pick another one. Here's one about aging. This is a photograph of a lioness. And she's very tired, leaning against a tree. What can you teach me today? And the message is aging. When I was young, I could move very fast to hunt and feed my young. Now that I am old, my body is tired and moves slowly, so it is hard to find food. The younger members of our pride now hunt and share their food with us. Remember today to consider the weakened condition of the elderly. Do what you can to help. There are 52 cards. They're $20. Right now, they are only available through my website because they are not in the stores yet. They make beautiful gifts. Okay, now tonight we're going to be talking about vibrational healing. You've heard me speak in the past about Valerie Hunt's work and her associate, Rosalind Briard, and the consciousness of human vibration. In particular, what Dr. Hunt refers to is the human energy field, which is actually thought to be the human aura or spirit. Valerie's work was able to take electrical recordings from the human aura. It has been photographed, and just this last weekend, myself and associate photographed the auras of animals. Very interesting. Anyway, my guest tonight is Nancy Broadbent. Nancy is a licensed massotherapist and a certified equine sports massotherapist who understands the human energy field in humans and the energy field in animals. Nancy worked with Rosalind Briard and also Laura Chapman of Cleveland, Ohio, and has developed the skill of feeling the energy field with her hands and is able to move the energy around to induce healing, very much like Barbara Brennan, but a little bit different technique. She generously has agreed to be on the show and explain more fully how vibrational healing works. Welcome to the show, Nancy. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Agnes.
Nancy, can you tell us how did you become interested in this kind of work?
Well, it started out with becoming interested in massotherapy, and I was actually working in the financial field in a very left-brain occupation, and I was having some issues and thought that getting some body work might help me to work through my own personal issues, and found out that not only was that true, but that I really, really enjoyed the body work, and I had an intuition that even though I had never done anything remotely like this in my life, that it would be something that I would both enjoy and be good at. And that's really how I got started.
When did you actually become aware that you could feel the energy field with your hands? Now, I just stated it can be recorded from, it can be photographed, but you can actually feel it. Can you describe that to us?
The way that I got started was I was actually at a seminar learning how to teach a personal growth course, and there were a couple of healers there with me, along with a number of other people, and there was a woman who was a nurse and was scheduled to be going in for breast cancer surgery in a couple of days, and she asked the healers if they would work on her. And they asked me if I would like to participate, and I said, yeah, I'd love to do that. And basically didn't have a clue what I was doing. They told me where to put my hands, and they kind of told me what to do, and I basically hung out with them. That was my first experience with doing energy healing. And what happened was a couple of days later, we got a phone call from the woman who was scheduled for the surgery. She had gone in for one final set of tests and an MRI, and the tumor was gone. And that was such a profoundly opening experience for me. It was so exciting to me to have participated in something like that, that I knew that I wanted to pursue that. And as I started to take classes and learn, I started to develop the sensitivity in my hands so that I could actually feel the energy and also begin to interpret what I was feeling.
Can you describe to the listeners what the sensation is that you're actually feeling? You're feeling with your hands, right?
Right. I'm feeling with my hands, and actually I'm also feeling with my whole body. The hands are kind of the conduit that the information comes in on, but when I'm working with someone and I'm in their field, I also pick up stuff with my whole body. So first I'll tell you a little bit about what I'm feeling with my hands.
Okay.
It's kind of hard to describe because our language doesn't have a lot of words to describe energy, but I feel a vibration in my hands, and I feel sensations of movement. Sometimes I feel spinning if my hands are over a chakra. And I feel the quality of the energy that I'm feeling. So sometimes what I'm feeling feels kind of heavy and sluggish, and sometimes it feels very lively and quick. There's a whole bunch of different qualities that are kind of hard to describe, but they've come to mean different things to me based on years of experience of feeling them. And then the other thing that happens is I also feel things in my body, and what I tend to feel in my body are generally whatever emotional states I'm encountering in the person that I'm working in. So I may be putting my hand somewhere on a person's body, and I will suddenly feel very angry or afraid or some other emotion, and what I know is that I am picking up what that person is feeling and what is actually located energetically at that place in their body. And then I can talk to them about that, and we process that.
So this is partially a sensation in your hands, but as you touch that energy field, you're also intuiting some other information.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a spinning. Does this spinning vibration have a direction like clockwise or counterclockwise?
I don't always feel the spinning, but when I do feel it, I can generally determine what direction it's going in. And it's kind of interesting, Agnes, because there's so many interpretations about the chakras and which direction they're going to spin. And if I tell you what direction they're spinning, I know there's going to be someone out there who's going to say, "Oh no, they're supposed to spin another direction." But what I learned from Rosalind, and it's a theory that really makes a lot of sense to me, is that basically our bodies are designed to pull up energy from the earth. Mm-hmm. And so the direction that the chakras spin is directly related to the magnetic field of the earth. In the upper hemisphere, typically the chakras, if you're facing the front of the body, the chakras are spinning clockwise. From the back, they spin counterclockwise. And it's the same thing as if you watch water circling a drain. If you go below the equator, they spin in the opposite direction, just like water below the equator spins in the opposite direction.
That's interesting. Just this week, I was reviewing some of the papers that I had read about auras because we were photographing auras, and I discovered that if you photograph a person's aura, it does spin. It goes around the body. The energy field does rotate. And if you photograph it from the top, it goes in a clockwise direction, except when there's a full moon, and then it reverses and goes counterclockwise.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I told that to a group of astrologers I was giving a lecture to a couple weeks ago, and they were all very interested and had lots of questions like, about the moon waxing and waning, and they didn't get into anything that detailed, except that they reported that on the day of the full moon, your aura or your energy field reverses its polarity and spins the other direction.
Well, that's really interesting, because another thing, one of the funny little details about what I had told you about the chakra spinning clockwise is that during a woman's menstrual cycle, the central meridian reverses direction, and some of the chakras will also reverse direction. And that it's about a 9-day cycle, and it's sort of a sloughing off cycle where we're eliminating ideas and concepts and feelings that we no longer want or need, as well as the physical elimination of menstruation.
That would be an interesting study.
I think it would be.
I don't have a camera myself, but my friend does, although she lives in Albany. But that would be a very interesting thing to study, the human aura, because she does photograph. Actually, it's two systems. One photographs the face. Another one photographs the chakras, which she did for me, which gave me the idea to do animals. That would be very interesting to see how it changed, because we subjected the animals to a number of tests before and after eating, and also litter mates, how their aura was. And it was very interesting that it seems to be very similar to humans. And we also did some tests with Reiki on the animal before and after a Reiki treatment. And this happened to be a cat. And it was very interesting because before the Reiki treatment, the aura was very much alive and colorful and bright, showed a lot of energy. But after the Reiki treatment, it was very, very subdued and only one color. It was almost depressed, which is what you would think the opposite would happen, that it would be more alive and more, I'm not exactly sure what I want to say here. But I was very surprised at the outcome. So it should be interesting when we analyze all this data.
That's surprising to me, too. That is really interesting.
Yeah, I would expect the opposite, because animals react very favorably to Reiki, and they are very aware of it. The only complaint they have is that the person puts their hands too close. And if part of the tissue is inflamed, it's going to feel hot. And then their hand makes it even feel hotter, so it irritates them. So they asked the person who was doing the Reiki to pull their hands back a little farther away, because otherwise it's irritating it. They always talks about, can you give us an estimate of the size of the human energy field in a patient? And does the size vary in persons that are older or ill?
Yeah, the size actually does vary. it's interesting. When I was studying with Rosalind, one of the things she told us to do was go out into the woods and find a stick that was as tall as we were.
Mm-hmm.
And then to take that and sort of hang it over your shoulders. And that is how big the aura on a really healthy, functioning person should be. So it would be actually taking your height and taking that height and laying it horizontal, if you will, or perpendicular.
Uh-huh.
So, in other words, if I'm 5 foot five, I should have a 5 foot five wide aura, which would be like about 2 1/4 on each side of me.
When you feel a patient's aura, when you approach their energy field, do you feel it as different distances away from the patient?
Yeah, and actually, there's a couple of layers to it. There's one that's sort of an outer layer, and then there's another layer that's much closer to the body. And it does vary from person to person. It, usually at the end of a session, it's much more palpable. And I would say that at the end of a session, when a person is filled up, the average person's aura, I can feel it probably about 2 feet. Out from their body.
Okay, now when you're saying you feel it, I mean, our hand right now is resting in the air. But as you feel this, you're not feeling heat, right? You're feeling a resistance.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's a good way to describe it.
Okay. Now, Valerie talks a lot about field transactions. Can you describe what this is to the listeners? Because you have an auric field, or an energy field, I have one. And then the two, as soon as you get close to somebody, you're sort of entering their energy field?
Right. And it applies not only to people, but anything that has an electrical energy field. So we're also talking about computers and toasters and TV sets, things like that. But for the purpose of the discussion, we'll just limit it to humans. With people, when you get into someone else's energy field, there's a period of about 20 minutes or so when you're syncing up with their field. And then what happens is the bigger field tends to lose energy and the smaller field tends to gain energy until it reaches an equilibrium.
I see. That's what she said in her book, too, when she was recording electrical energy from the field. She said that people that were ill were at a certain level, arbitrarily, let's just say level 2, and the healer is at a level 6, and they can combine their energy field until you can actually record that the healer's energy goes down to a 4 and the patient's energy comes up to a 4.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't go higher than the healer.
Right. Right. It wouldn't go higher than the healer. And for that reason, often when we're trying to affect a really powerful change with a very ill person,
uh-huh.
It makes sense to have more than one healer present so that you've got a bigger field and you can have more of an impact and less of a drain on the healers.
Do the energy fields combine if you have two healers?
Yeah, in the sense that it's kind of like it multiplies.
Kind of amplifies it.
Pardon me?
It kind of amplifies it.
Yeah, that would be a good way to describe it. It's like if you and I get together and we work together on someone else and that person is very ill, we get the impact of both of our fields, and that's going to have more of an impact and a more of an ability to raise that person's energy level than if only one of us were doing it.
Okay. Now, do you, in your practice, do you use the human energy field vibration to smooth out other dysfunctional vibrations in the person?
That's certainly one of the things that I do. What I try to do is balance out the energy, release or move anything that is stuck or stagnant, because there really isn't any such thing as bad energy. There's just energy that moves and energy that doesn't. And energy that isn't moving is not functioning properly.
I see. Is it similar to what Barbara Brennan has written in her book, Hands of Light? She's got some very good drawings of energy fields of people, and you see them all distorted. Even though you can't see auras and I can't see auras, does it feel like it's that kind of movement where she would come in and she would push it from one place to another and show a before and after?
Yeah, I think that it is. I mean, like, just as you just said, she's got diagrams that, because she's actually able to see very clearly.
Right.
Clairvoyance is one of her gifts. I primarily work kinesthetically, which means I feel a lot, and then I have some clairsentient abilities as well. So I can only imagine what it actually looks like, but I know that what it feels like is, you know, sometimes things will be very lopsided, for instance, where a person's energy is very top-heavy. That's a very typical thing. Or they're actually not even in their body. They're actually kind of hanging out outside of their body for
That's
some
like
reason.
That's like a psychosis.
Also people who have been abused sometimes will detach from their bodies.
Yes.
And live outside the body. And so part of what I do is try to pull them back in so that their energetic body is lined up as closely as possible with their physical body.
Yes, it's hard to describe what it is. As a psychologist, I have encountered this many times. You look at a person and you know that they're psychotic. They actually are out of their body because you see their energy, and when you see their body, it looks like a corpse, and it's just there's nothing there. And what we try to do again is to sort of tuck in their security blanket to get them back in, so they are experiencing their life instead of trying to escape from it. I don't know how to explain that.
I think that's a good explanation.
Nance, what can you tell us about the energy field in animals? Does it feel different than in humans?
It does feel different. One of the things that I've noticed with the energy field in animals is that it generally seems bigger and stronger in proportion to the size of the animal. Like there's a whole lot of spirit packed into a small physical form. Like humans, it does vary by the age and health of the animal.
I've noticed in aura photography that the aura of animals is quite large. It's like four times the size of the animal on each side, and it goes way out. In your experience, is it larger in some animals?
Well, I think that it's really large in their, you know, if you find an animal that's really healthy and energetic, they seem to feel really large. Dogs feel larger to me than cats for some reason. Horses feel, of course, they're physically large, but their energy field feels very, very large to me.
Yeah, they're very powerful animals. I wonder if that may be a factor. Can you describe your experiences with the energy field in horses?
Sure. In addition to working on horses, I've also ridden them off and on for my whole life, and I think that one of the things that's so appealing about riding, at least to me, is that because the animal's field is so huge, that sitting on a horse is kind of like taking a big warm energy bath. And horse energy, unless they're alarmed, is very peaceful, very, very peaceful kind of energy. So being in a horse's presence, whether riding them or working on them, grooming them, in a very short period of time, no matter how I was feeling when I approached the horse, in a very short time, I feel very peaceful and very much synced up with the energy field of the horse.
When you ride a horse, and I can't speak from experience because I have a bad back and I never get on horses, but people have told me that they feel like they become one. And when I've talked to horses about this, they've told me that it's like a marriage between the horse and the rider, that the two become one. And it's the rider's intention that combines with the horse's power. Can you describe what your experience is?
Yeah, I think that's a really good description of what happens. I've had experiences where I've been riding a horse through the woods, and the horse will be going forward and everything will be going great. And if I become distracted from the trail ahead and by a bird or a squirrel or something and turn to look at that and I lose my focus about moving forward, the horse will either stumble, or sometimes the horse that I've been riding lately will just simply stop, like, okay, what do you want me to do next? Because he's been so tuned in to my direction and where I think we're going that when I lose that focus, he loses his focus too, and he doesn't know where to go.
I get calls from people who have trouble with their horses, and especially if they're show horses or racers, sometimes the animal will not cooperate. They won't get in the carrier, and various things, and they make it so the person has a very difficult time even mounting them. And when I talk to the horse, it's always about the same thing. They feel that if they go in the carrier, that they're going away and they're never coming back. Mm. Because with horses, they're traded so often that a horse can have 12 owners in 6 years.
Right.
And they get very badly hurt by that because they really want to be part of your family and part of your pet, your personal pet. And so I have to convince them that they're there to stay. And usually people call me that, you know, they bought the horse and they intend to keep the horse for the rest of its life. But it becomes an issue, and it's like their energy fields don't click until I tell the horse that yes, you are their family, and this is your home for the rest of your life, and they're putting you in the trailer just to go for practice, and you're going to come back because horses get very attached to other horses, and all they really want to do is say goodbye, but they never know when they go in the carrier if they're ever going to come back there again and see their friends. Very interesting, but they don't cooperate with you unless they know that their relationship with you is going to continue.
Yeah, I think it has to do with horses being herd animals, and in a sense that, you know, and horses form very, very strong attachments with other horses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because they have very strong likes and dislikes about other horses as well.
Oh.
Just like we do, you know, just like we do with people, like mm-hmm. there are certain people that we like and there are certain people that we don't like so much. And horses are the same way. And I think that one of the things that happens is because they're herd animals, they also have a tendency to look at us as either part of their herd or not part of their herd. And
okay.
Once you're part of the herd, then they're extremely cooperative. It's their nature to cooperate because that's how they survive together in the wild. And it sounds like, from the thing that you're telling me, that the horses aren't sure at that point whether those people are really part of their herd or not, you know, whether they're going to be able to stay with those people. And once they know that they can, then that whole thing about being part of the group, I think, probably clicks in.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had a lady from California call me who had a prize-winning pony. This pony, I don't know what they call those exercises, but this was a champion pony, and it belonged to her daughter, and her daughter loved the pony, but she grew up and became too big for this pony, and the parents were going to sell the pony, and every time they asked the pony to perform, you know, to show what it can do, it wouldn't do anything. And so she called me and she said, the pony now won't go into the ring even with my daughter on it. So I talked to this pony, and it was very saddened because he said that horses become champions not for themselves but out of love for their owner, their person, and that if he was just going to be discarded and sold to someone else, he wasn't going to perform anymore. And so I told this to the family, and the family never realized that the horse had such feelings. And they agreed that they would keep the pony as a pet and he could still live in their barn and with all the rest of the horses. And when he heard that, he was so overjoyed that the next day he entered into a championship, whatever that was, and he won. but it was because he knew that he was going to stay with the people that he loved.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. What about dogs? Dogs that train and become champions. What is your experience with that?
Well, I don't have as much experience with dogs as I do with horses. I can talk a little bit about my own dog and her energy field.
Okay.
She's a very sensitive dog. And being a healer, of course, I wanted to work on her. And for the longest time, she would not let me work on her. As soon as I would get close to her with it, you know, if I would pat her absentmindedly, that was fine. But as soon as I put my hands on her with any intention, she would move away, growl, let me know that this was not okay. And it wasn't until I was talking to another healer who said, you know, she probably doesn't like the way your energy field feels. And if you go in the same vibration that she is, she'll let you in. And that turned out to be correct. That when I was able to kind of read her energy and then sort of sync up my own vibration with hers, then she was much more amenable to letting me touch her. Although I do think that the thing that you mentioned earlier about sensitivity and needing to pull your hands away is also true.
Mm-hmm. I found that to be true with animals in general. People say, how can you communicate with animals? Because they honor them as fellow beings, because we're members of the animal kingdom as well. And so I don't place myself above them. I place myself as an equal with them. And they're much more agreeable to talk with me and give me great information than if I sort of came on to them like, you know, can you really talk? Is that really true? I just, you know, sort of get into their field and say, my name is Agnes, and I introduce myself and say, is it okay if I talk to you? And I let them do the talking about themselves. I'm going to have to take a break here for a moment, okay? So we will be right back. This program is sponsored by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. If your church or organization is looking for a fundraising project, why not have your members get together and contribute their favorite recipes and publish your organization's own cookbook? Our church did it, and it was a really fun and interesting project. Some ladies even wrote a paragraph about how long the recipe was in their family and special days that the dish was served as a tradition. Visit their website at www.garnettpublishing.com. That's Garnett with two T's. You can also call them at area code 216-458-6100. And we'd love to hear from you, listeners. The worldwide toll-free number, again, is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And we're talking live with Nancy Broadbent of Cleveland, Ohio. Nancy, when I talked to you earlier, you mentioned that sometimes when you're doing a session with a client or a patient, you see little white lights that appear in the field. What do you think these are?
Well, I'm not really sure what they are, Agnes. I have a couple of theories. One is that they may be acupoints, but they may be something else. And what I find is that often my hands are drawn, you know, I'm intuitively drawn to put my hand someplace, but if I'm not being intuitively drawn, then I'll see these little white lights, and they let me know where my hands need to go next. So sometimes I'm wondering if maybe I'm getting some guidance from the other side or some angels or something that are kind of helping me along when the intuitive mechanism isn't working quite so well.
So you might be getting some spiritual guidance.
Yeah, I think so.
The reason I asked you that is because I have a friend, Mary Ellen, Angel Scribe, and she's a wonderful photographer and very in tune with angels and so on. And she emailed me a photograph that she took of a fire that occurred in a mill. I think it was in upstate Oregon. And she goes, her daughter's a firefighter, and she goes as a photographer to take photographs of these fires so that the people in training can study them. And she sent me one that she took last week, and it had all these little round circles in it.
Hmm.
And she asked me what they are, and I know a woman who can see orbs. And she gave a lecture last year here in Cleveland at the Mind, Body, Spirit Expo. And she can see them, and she actually photographed them. And when I saw Mary Ellen's picture, I immediately said, those are orbs, those are spirits, but what would they be doing in a mill? And maybe there were animals inside that died, or even mice. And she looked into a little further, and she found that that mill, before it became a mill, used to be a small town church. And she thought that maybe there was some connection between the orbs and that being a church at one time. So what you're describing as little white lights has been photographed by people, by many people, actually. And nobody quite knows what they are. And, in fact, there's a program on television now. It's on the Travel Channel. I don't know if you get it, but it's about ghosts and hunting. And you can see them all the time in these photographs, these live video. I mean, these videos of what they're seeing when they go through these haunted houses, and you can see these little orbs, and they're all over the place. So the white lights that you mentioned didn't seem to me something out of the ordinary. It just meant that there's other activity going on that we can't see with our physical eyes.
That's really interesting. Yeah, the only time I actually see them is when I'm working on someone, which makes me believe that, you know, I'm seeing them for a reason. And I have talked to a couple of other healers who see them as well, including a Native American healer. So it seems to be a pretty common phenomenon.
It's probably some sort of energy trace that you're picking up, because it's definitely something out there that is unexplained, and somehow it's associated with healing and spirit and so on. I remember years ago when I was learning animal communication, there was a farm in Pennsylvania, or in New York State where I went, and they had a load of animals, and they had a fire in their barn.
We have a caller.
We have a call.
Would you like to take it?
Yes.
I'll put them on. Take a few seconds.
Okay. We have a caller. We'd like to take the call. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, Dr. Agnes and Nancy. I've enjoyed your show thus far, and I actually have a question for each of you. Nancy, do you sense energies other than in person? Do you do it distant energy readings? You have to have actual physical hands on or near?
Yeah, I'm a hands-on person. I'm a kinesthetic person. So
that was what I thought I heard you mention earlier.
Yeah, I don't actually, at least at this point, I'm not gifted in the ability to do a long-distance reading.
I understand. That would then redirect me back to Dr. Agnes.
Okay.
I could use your help, Dr. Agnes, with speaking to one of my animals, if you would.
Okay, can you speak a little louder? I can barely hear you.
Sure. I would ask that if you're able to reach one of my pets.
Yes. Over the air? Yes, I can, but it would take more time than we have. Because in order to contact your pet, I have to go in an altered state.
Oh, dear.
And then I have to open up a conversation with the pet's permission. Okay. And then I can do it. But we have very little time left tonight.
I understand.
I'd love for you to call me. You can get me on my website. You can email me at talktopets@AOL.com.
I'm sorry. I can hardly hear you as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, please go to my website, petstellthetruth.com, and you can contact me by email, and I will answer your question.
Okay. Thank you so much to
both
of you, and blessings for your work. Thank you for your gifts.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good night.
Okay, where were we? I was talking about the fire in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of animals inside the barn when the fire broke out. And the lady said she knew there was a whole family of cats, and there were cows and everything else in this barn. But none of them came out. And above the flames, they could see all these little orbs flying around, the little orbs everywhere. And when they took a closer look, she said you could see that they were angels, little tiny angels the size of butterflies.
Wow.
And she asked the animals, this was an animal communicator too, she asked the animals why they died in the fire. And they said that they were a family and they wanted to die together. I have some experience talking about and talking to these little orbs or animals that can see them, and of course the animals can see them. But I have no scientific documentation as of yet to their existence. You're located in the Cleveland area. Is there a website or email or a phone where persons can get in touch with you?
Sure. There's a couple of ways that people can get in touch with me. One would be via telephone, and that number is 440-333-8866, extension 2. And they could also get in touch with me via email. And my email address is nmbroadbent, B-R-O-A-D-B-E-N-T, @sbcglobal.net.
Okay, I want to remind listeners to be sure and listen to BBS Radio on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for Metaphysical Straight Talk with my friend Atira Hatton. Atira is a gifted psychic who can tune in to your heart's mission in this life. She is associated with Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment and is a sought-after speaker on spirituality and metaphysics. Nancy, I remember visiting you last year, and I was having trouble with my back. And when I lay down on your little bed there, and you ran your hands over the top of me. When you got to my neck, you said that the sensation felt weird. You probably don't remember it at this time. But I have a titanium plate in my neck holding the bones together. And you said at the time that you were picking up interference by the plate. When your hands go over the body of a human or an animal, do you feel certain sensations that tell you there's something abnormal going on?
Yeah, I do, and sometimes it's a matter then of interpreting what I feel. It's kind of like learning another language.
Uh-huh.
For instance, with the titanium plate, if you remember, I said it felt weird,
mm-hmm.
and that was because I don't think I'd ever felt a titanium plate before, and then I could put that in my biocomputer and say, oh, okay, that's what titanium feels like. And so it's, as a healer, I've had to over time develop a vocabulary of, okay, that's what cancer feels like. Okay, that's what this feels like. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
And that's because of that's the way that I work. Because I work kinesthetically, it's about developing a vocabulary.
In the beginning of this conversation, you talked about working with Ralphlin and Laura, and that there was a woman. Did you say she had a tumor in her breast?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Okay, and that you were totally amazed because what? Do you know actually what the mechanism was that did that? That took a supposedly altered the breast tumor You know, I've seen this video many times on television about these Chinese guys who are thinking about this kidney stone that this man had, and they were thinking, and they kept videotaping them, and you could see the kidney stone actually burst and break up into pieces by what they were doing. Now, I have no idea how that works, but it was some sort of thought vibration, but it was pretty impressive. Do you have any guess as to the mechanism by which this woman's tumor became altered by what you were doing?
Well, here's my guess. Cancer has a much lower vibration than the healthy tissue, and there were actually, which is one of the reasons why there were actually three of us working with this woman at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And by having three healers and then doing the thing we talked about with field transactions, how you can actually raise the lower field and lower the fields that are higher. If you can get the field up to where it's vibrating like normal human tissue,
mm-hmm.
then it's normal human tissue.
This reminds me of, Nancy? It's in ancient Egypt, and we've talked about this on the show several times, the priestesses would use cats as their familiars in the healing process, and the patient would come in with a certain ailment, and the animal, and they would describe this ailment to the priestess, and the animal, usually a cat, would sort of, I guess you could call it, get into the person's field. But they would, out of empathy, take the person's illness onto themselves. And cats can astral project. And the person went home healed. And then the cat had the disease. And the cat would raise its and go to another higher dimension where the vibration was higher. And then the cat would heal itself. And then it would come back down into its own body healed. And this has been written about in various places, but nobody really understood the mechanism. I wonder if it was the same thing, that they raised themselves to a higher vibration, and I don't understand how they took the illness onto themselves, although I do know one animal communicator who said she had a sick bird, and the bird had a very badly infected eye. And out of sympathy and empathy for the bird, she tried to make the bird well. And in exchange, she got a barely infected eye and had to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so she took on the ailment herself, and she warned us when we were learning this not to do that, because we can take on the person's illness ourselves by being too sympathetic.
Yeah, and so, I've actually had that experience myself.
Have you?
Oh, yeah, with people. And so one of the reasons I wanted to start working on animals was because I thought, well, that will change. And I soon discovered that, in fact, it doesn't change. when I was in training to learn how to work on do horse massage,
mm-hmm.
I was working on a horse with a very, very stiff neck and feeling a lot of sympathy and empathy for the horse. And when I was done working on the horse didn't have a stiff neck, but I did. And then the guy who was teaching us actually had to work on my neck. And so I learned that I really need to keep a certain level of detachment. I can feel that I have to stay detached and not take on the problems of the human or the animal that I'm working with.
I understand perfectly. We were very carefully guided not to take on the emotions or the problems of the patient in psychology, or the psychology onto ourselves, because then we become personally involved and we're experiencing the same thing that the person is, and we can't get out of it any more than the person can. So we are no longer able to help the patient, and we have to refer them to a different therapist because we have become part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the power of being too empathic because it can endanger yourself. So you have to stay objective, and you have to always remember to be a good listener, but not to take on that problem yourself. Otherwise, you're not helping the patient.
You're not helping the patient, and worse, in addition to not helping the patient, you're making yourself ill.
Yes, and none of us want to get ill. We just want to help wherever we can, but it's very important to stay objective. Well, we're running out of time, and I'd like you to repeat again, if you would, how people can get in touch with you.
Sure. There are two ways to get in touch with me. One is via telephone. The number is 440-333-8866, extension 2. And my email address is mmbroadbent, B-R-O-A-D-B-E-N-T, at sbcglobal.net.
If there is a particular topic that the listeners would like to hear about animals, please email me at talktopets@aol.com or visit my website at www.petstellthetruth.com. If you like the show, you can contact the producers at www.bbsradio.com and let them know that you would like to hear more of this kind of programming. Nancy, thank you so much for being our guest tonight. It was very informative, and especially because a lot of my work is based on Valerie Hunt's work, and so this hit me very close to home. Okay, and one more time, if you would, how to get in touch with you.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Agnes. I really enjoyed talking with you as well. And people can get in touch with me at 440-333-8866, extension 2, or via email, nmbroadbent, B-R-O-A-D-B-E-N-T, at sbcglobal.net.
Next week, I will have a special guest. His name is Chris Esser. He is a former firefighter, and he is still a volunteer firefighter. And he is going to talk to us about the animals that got affected by Hurricane Katrina. And he has some very interesting things to tell. And he's going to be the new manager of the new Petco in Medina, Ohio. I will be there for the grand opening. I will be signing books or doing a book signing, also introducing my new cards. It is located on Pearl Road and Route 18 in Medina. And it will be interesting to have people who have had experiences with losing animals or taking care of animals from Hurricane Katrina to call in. I know that I've done some therapy on dogs that were found from Katrina, and it is really pitiful to hear them. Usually if I contact an animal, it's mind-to-mind communication. But when I talk to them, telepathically, you can hear them even cry out in agony for what they saw. And we're going to talk a little bit about that next week. So, Nancy, thank you again for your participation tonight. It was lovely of you to come. And this is Dr. Agnes Thomas saying good night. Listen in next week. Thank you.